Hey there, I'm your host Alexis Newland and you're listening to The Brave Podcast. I am so happy you're tuning in today. Each week, a friend and I get together and talk about what makes them brave. So sit back, relax, grab your favorite cup of coffee or tea, and get ready for some engaging conversation. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Brave Podcast. So happy to have you guys back today. This is episode 38. And so we are continuing on in our Cancer Survivor series, and my next survivor is one of my favorite people ever. Her name is Caroline Tigress Wolden. Tigress is her FD nickname. When you're a part of First Ascents, that's the group I met her, you get a nickname. And so mine was Renegade and hers was Tigress. I met her, on the first day, and remember we sat out on hammocks and talked for a super long time. Love her to death. She's one of my favorite people. And she is our next survivor. She is a breast cancer survivor and she also has Lyme disease. So she's gonna share what it's like to kind of live with both of those illnesses. Well, now she's a survivor of breast cancer, so that's gone, but how it is living with Lyme disease. She is recently engaged, and so congrats to you, Tigress. And she lives in Minnesota and is a nurse. She is absolutely wonderful. You're going to love her and her story, and I hope it encourages you. So without further ado, here is my interview with Caroline.
Right. Okay, you ready? Okay. This is The Brave Podcast, and my guest today is Caroline Wolden. Did I say your last name right?
You did.
Awesome. Okay. And we met at First Ascents, August of last year, rock climbing. And so she's on today to share her story about her cancer journey. So Caroline, introduce yourself. Tell people why you're awesome.
Hi, I'm Caroline. I'm awesome because I'm friends with Alexis, but I'm awesome because I'm fun, trying new things, love to travel. Really happy to get this opportunity to share my story and hope it connects with somebody.
Cats. I know this is not cancer related, but I love your cat.
I mean, my cats are amazing. I got them during chemo. Really, it was just an excuse to get cats, but they were my emotional support animals. They're brother and sister.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So Solis, S-O-L-I-S, it means sunlight in Latin, and Aurora, which means dawn in Latin. And no, I don't speak Latin. but yeah, Solis, we joke, has toxic masculinity because he just can't express his feelings in a healthy way. So he's always just kind of being a jerk. And Aurora is very sweet, but they're great. They have their own Instagram because I'm that type of cat mom.
How long have you had them?
Oh, they're about 2.5 years or so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll dive into your cancer journey a little bit. When did you find out you had cancer? What signs did you have that there was something going wrong?
So, I mean, signs and like intuition, I was in nursing school and there was a woman who was in my class that got diagnosed with ovarian cancer the semester before I got diagnosed. And I just remember saying so many times to several friends, because of my own like medical history with other stuff, like, I don't think my body could handle chemo. If I needed chemo, I think I would die. And I kept saying that, and I didn't know why I was saying that, but I was just kind of triggered by this other person who had cancer. And then, yeah, I just had like a kind of strange feeling. And there was just, so it was the week of July 15th. And I like woke up at the beginning of the week, and this just sounds wild, but I was like, I feel like this week is like the beginning of the end. Like, I just kept thinking that, and that, like, I woke up, and that, like, sentence came to my head, like, this is the beginning of the end, the beginning of the end, and no idea what I was thinking in. Like, there was no cancer that I knew of at that point, but I just kept thinking that about that week, and I just had this really weird feeling that I was going to have, like, a transformative week. I can't explain it, and the time actually leading up to that too, so it was the summer before my final semester of nursing school. And I just kept getting like crazy bouts of anxiety of like, I feel like I shouldn't even leave the house because I don't want something to happen that would keep me from graduating nursing school. And like that's not my personality to avoid going outside. And I love trying new things. Like we met rock climbing, yeah. But I just kept getting this like overwhelming anxiety of like, well, don't go break your arm and then you can't go to clinicals or break your leg. Like, I shouldn't go out. I don't want anything to get in the way. And I just kind of was hard on myself about that. Like, stop having such crazy thoughts. Like, why am I feeling this way? But I think part of me was like sensing that there was something going on. So anyway, I was in the shower July 15th, my sister's birthday, and I was just washing myself with body wash. I've never been one to do like breast checks, and I know you should. And I felt this bump and I was like, huh, it's kind of strange. Didn't really think much of it. Got out, called my sister Danielle over, and I was like, Danielle, come feel this. Does this feel weird to you? And she's like, no, I don't think so. I'm like, yeah, me neither. And so I've mentioned that story to enough friends that they're like, we'll just go get it checked out just in case. So I just scheduled an appointment with my OB. I was overdue for a visit anyway, so I figured I'd get all the uncomfortable things done on the same visit. And so, yeah, I could tell when she was like feeling the bump, I could kind of see concern in her eyes. So I knew that like she was worried. And I think she knew that I knew she was worried because she's like, it's okay. I think it's fine. But I don't know. You could tell she didn't. Yeah. And so she referred me for a mammogram and an ultrasound, which I had the next day. And then the radiologist, like they did the mammogram first, and the radiologist, like, they read your mammogram between when you'd get the ultrasound. And so I'm waiting in the room in my robe and it's taking forever for them to read the results. Cause they're like, it should be 10 minutes and then we'll do the ultrasound. So we're getting to like 15 and 20 minutes. And this, the MRI tech came up to me and was like, the doctor hasn't forgotten about you. He's just still looking at your mammogram. And I'm like, okay, like something's going on. Like, you're not just admiring my breasts. Like, there's something going on. Yeah. And so then normally it would be an ultrasound tech that would do the ultrasound, but it was the radiologist that wanted to do it. And so I knew there was something going on then. I asked him, I was like, what do you think this is? And he's like, to be honest, it's suspicious. And then I said, in your experience, have you ever had it not be cancer? And he's like, in my experience, no. So did a biopsy. So I kind of knew, but I didn't know for sure. And then it was the next day that I got a call about the results of the biopsy saying it's breast cancer.
How are you the day before you got the results from the biopsy? After getting all that done, how are you feeling?
I mean, so I remember like when I was waiting, I don't even remember what I was waiting for, but like I was there and I was sitting in this room and I remember texting some of my friends and stuff and saying they think it's cancer. F, but it was the F bomb. And then I went to a brewery that night and just had like dinner and a beer with some people because it just kind of felt like this weird little like eve before everything changes. And so it's surreal. I mean, I think you can't just like process that in 1 second. So I just think part of me, a huge part of it was just shock and like, well, I'm going to go enjoy a beer tonight and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah. And the next day you get that result that it's cancer. So what did life look like after? Like what started happening for you?
Well, the first thing I did after I got that call was I went for a walk around the lake by my house because I was like, I just knew that everything was going to change. And so it's like, I took that moment to just like connect with God and nature and just have this moment of stillness until I just like ventured into this unknown. So with breast cancer, they usually set you up with a surgeon first.
Oh, okay.
And you meet with them. Yeah, it's kind of strange. So you meet with the surgeon, you kind of plan what you want to do. Do you want reconstruction? Do you want a lumpectomy, just removing like the tumor? Do you want a mastectomy, which is removing the tumor and all the breast tissue? Just all sorts of questions like that. So I met with actually a couple different surgeons to just get a couple different opinions. And they have what's called like a cancer care coordinator. And so they kind of like tell you like, this is what happens now. This is what you're going to do now. This is what you're going to do next. And they talk you through it. So I met with the surgeon and then they usually order some further imaging. So they ordered a breast MRI.
Okay.
And just to kind of see if they're seeing any like activity in the lymph nodes. And so then, they ordered the breast MRI. I found the surgeon I wanted and then opted for a single side mastectomy and then met my oncologist. I met two oncologists, but the second one is the one I really like and who I decided to go with. So it was just kind of this weird in between time.
Yeah.
And then kind of like kicked into cancer treatment and what that looks like.
Gosh, that is a trip. I couldn't imagine getting diagnosed and then, okay, you're going to see a surgeon to see how they're going to take care of your breast. And I would just, these things annoy me, but like, it's just a very, it's part of your body and
yeah,
it really changes like what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to lose them or if they start sagging or just, it's just, they're
yeah,
a part of what makes us feminine. So it's like, I can't mm-hmm. imagine going and like discussing, because my cancer like that hasn't been an option, thankfully, but like, I couldn't imagine going and discussing that. And then also hearing now I have to go get chemo too on top of
yeah.
that. So that's
yeah.
a lot to deal with. And how old were you?
Yeah. 31.
Wow. So just like yeah. when you're starting your 30s and.
Yep. And it was, so mind you, like this was the summer before my last semester of nursing yeah. school. And so there was, I have a lot of weird symptoms in general from my like other health history. And so my oncologist was worried that I could be having like neurological symptoms related to the cancer having spread.
Okay.
And so she wanted to order a PET scan, but that had to happen like after the surgery. So there was like a 6-week period of time where I didn't know the staging of my cancer. In other words, I didn't know how advanced it was. So yeah. it was this kind of limbo and like humbling experience that it's hard to even explain of like, not knowing if I'm living or dying.
Yeah.
Like I'm either going to get a terminal diagnosis or I'm going to get like, I just had no idea until I had that scan and had those results. Like it was a month and a half of like, well, how do I plan for nursing school and my career? Like, do I even get to have a career? Do I even get to be a nurse? And it just, yeah, it was a lot to think about and the most humbling experience of my life for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're like starting your 30s and you have all these plans and then cancer is something you never really think about
yeah.
at any yep. age, especially like in your 30s. And that's like your prime time to be like planning career, planning for marriage, planning for a family. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have this disease that just comes and changes yeah. your world.
Yeah. yeah. And no family history. So.
Oh, no family history at all.
No,
oh,
no.
Wow. Okay. So you also have. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I blame nursing school. It's yeah. stressful.
It was stressed. So did you finish? Like
I did.
Yeah, duh, because you're a nurse now. But like,
I kind of went back and forth. Do I even try? I reached out to the faculty that taught for the last semester. I decided to just go for it. Worst thing is I'd have to put it off. But I actually, so I had surgery about a week and a half before my last semester started. And then wow. I had chemo throughout it, and I finished the semester, and I got a 4.0 that semester, and I'm really proud of that.
Awesome. What was it like going through chemo? Like, kind of, so people who don't know what it's like to go through chemo, what was it like to go through it? Like, what were some of the side effects you experienced?
Well, that's the hard thing, too. Like, obviously, like, Google is not your friend if you have cancer, as you know. Like, don't. Like, you'll find
don't
a death
Google,
sentence.
Guys. Yeah. Don't. It's,
10 out of 10 do not recommend.
Yeah.
But did I Google? Of course I did. And so just trying to find other people's experience, like what was this chemo drug like for you? But it's all across the board. And so since I have a history of Lyme disease and already have a lot of fatigue and dizziness and just neurological things that happen, I think that did chemo was hard, extra hard. But the first drug I had, AC, Adriamycin Carboplatin, it's called the Red Devil is
yeah,
a nickname.
I've heard about that.
That drug, it was extremely hard on me. So I had it dose dense, so every couple weeks, and I was so incredibly sick like the whole time. The fatigue, like most people would feel better after like 5 or 6 days, but I was sick like the whole 2 weeks between doses. And so I had 4 rounds of that, and that was really hard. It was a lot of nausea. A lot of vision changes with AC, actually. Like, my vision would be so blurry, I, like, couldn't watch TV. It was super strange. The fatigue was by far the worst. I'd have to go in for, like, extra just, like, infusions of fluids and stuff. But, yeah, the vision changes and, like, debilitating fatigue. Like, I slept all night once till, like, 5 p.m. the next day and woke up and it was, like, 5 p.m. Like, it's...
Whoa.
Yeah, and then a lot of undesirable, like, gastrointestinal effects as well.
Yeah.
But then Taxol, I had weekly doses of that, and I had 12 rounds of Taxol, and that I handled that really well. Like, I got sort of like, it causes neuropathy, so I was getting like some numbness in my fingers and toes, but that one was a breeze compared to the Red Devil.
Oh, I could imagine. I know like chemo is good for killing the disease, but what it just does to your body, and just if it could only not attack your whole body, it would just...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember feeling sad for my body with this whole experience. Just one, feeling sad that I have to like lose a part of my body, that there's nothing inherently wrong with it. And like, and just the chemo, like I felt bad knowing that these chemicals were going into my body. Like, was it the right thing? Like for me, of course it was. And I'd do it again. Like I'd make the same choice, but it still is just like, I don't know. I just felt bad. Because some people with cancer are like, yeah, my body tried to kill me, but I don't see my body as trying to kill me.
No. I'm a Like, I, after my own experience, I'm like, man, it made me really, like, cherish my body and, like, really want to take care of it. Because I'm like, okay, I get one of these things. And
yeah, same.
You're about checking on it and making sure, like, and knowing when something's off. And listening to the intuition that something's off, because sometimes you just want to ignore. But, like, I feel like God tells you, your body tells you something's off, and it's just much better to like just
answer
it. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So you go through treatment. What, I didn't ask, what stage were you at? Did you end up at?
I wound up being stage 2A. So it had not spread to my lymph nodes, which they thought it probably had, because it was like on the right side of my right breast, like right by my armpit. So it's right by lymph nodes. So I had a high grade tumor, which means it's like fast growing. Okay. So more, I had an aggressive tumor, and it was sensitive. It was hormone positive, so it was sensitive to estrogen and progesterone, and it was big. And so that's usually a ticket to have, in some ways, to have like lymphatic involvement. But I didn't, which was awesome. So it was staged as a stage 2 versus a stage 1 because of its size.
Okay.
And so, yes, it's stage 2A, and I needed a mastectomy because, like, I don't have huge breasts, and with the size of the tumor, like, my boob would have been so deformed if I just went for the lumpectomy.
Okay. And so asking about your, so after you have the surgery, like, I know some women opt to do, to get, like, implants to, like, replace the missing breast. Have you decided that for yourself, or are you?
That, I mean, that is a long story, but I originally was going to, so I was actually, I was originally going to have a double-sided mastectomy, so both of my breasts removed, and it was actually the night before surgery that I decided I didn't want that, because there was part, like, it was in my right breast, and my left breast, I was just like, like, there's nothing wrong with this part of my body, and, like, cancer is already taking part of my body away, and then, like, I don't want to give another part of my body away that there's nothing wrong with it. So then I decided to keep the left breast. So I originally opted to get, like, an implant on the right side to just kind of make them even, and that starts with an expander, because it's not like a regular breast implant. You don't have any breast tissue left. You don't have extra skin left. So you have an expander that gets filled with saline over time to stretch the skin to be able to put an implant. It would hurt if I had any feeling left there, but with all of the like breast tissue removed and all the nerve damage that happens with the surgery like that, I didn't have any feeling.
Okay.
Otherwise, yes, I'm sure that would be real uncomfortable. Yeah. But so I decided to do that. And then I changed my mind after that and decided to do what's called a tram flap surgery. So that's where they would use my own tissue to create a breast. I call it my Build-A-Boob workshop. And so they took like fat and muscle from my abdomen to build a breast. And then I had some major complications, a plastic surgeon that didn't take me seriously when I told him it was getting infected. So the wound that goes all the way across the bottom of my stomach split open.
Oh my gosh.
Got a Pseudomonas and a staph infection, and it needed a wound vac. And like, I was out of work for like 3 months. I smelled like a garbage can. Like, it was so infected. It was disgusting.
Oh, wow.
But needless to say, I've since gotten a different surgeon. But yeah, it was, so I have horrendous scarring now on my lower abdomen that I can hopefully get revised sometime. But so there's still like reconstruction that needs to happen, but I've just been wary to go back because I don't want to deal with any more surgical complications.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of not as simple as like a, did you get an implant or what'd you do? Cause for me, it's been a journey that's still happening.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize that. I knew you had a surgery. Was it in October of last year?
Yeah. So that was fat grafting. So, okay. It's like liposuction to kind of make that the flap look a little more like my real breast. So that was my most recent surgery and also the first surgery I haven't had complications in. So, cause mastectomy started splitting open as well. It was that same surgeon. So yeah. So anyway, that was a successful surgery and I've considered going back, but then obviously with COVID and stuff, that just hasn't been top of my priority list.
Definitely. So with cancer and your support system, how did your support system grow? Were there any gaps in your support? Like, did you feel that you had people you go to around our age or your family that you could talk to about this?
Yeah, definitely. I have a friend whose daughter had a heart transplant, and when I first got diagnosed, we like met for coffee and she's like, you know, you're going to be surprised at some of the people that are there for you and you're going to be surprised at some of the people that aren't.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely true.
Yes, it is.
There were people like I thought were like good friends of mine that then weren't there at all. In fact, so I brought a different person to chemo every time, and it was the first person I brought to chemo who I thought was like a good friend. And then I just became like, quote unquote, like too much or too heavy for her, like my cancer did. And so then let's like, if I have one regret, it's like, you didn't deserve to be at chemo with me with that. Like people like that. So there's that like, oh, what can I do to be supportive? And then there's the like, well, this has been going on for months, and then some people, and it's not personal ultimately, like people are uncomfortable with their own stuff. So if they can't be there, they can't be there. And so, yeah, it was just stuff like that. And so there was definitely some hurt in there. But also some people that have really stepped up, and there's been a whole mix of like people that have really been there and then the people that haven't. But my family was great. My sister, especially, I live with her. She allowed me to like not pay rent and just like was covering costs of everything and just was there for me with food, cooking, like whatever. And we're close in age. We're very good friends. And so she was amazing. And then, yeah, just my close friends and circle that was willing to listen and kind of just willing to sit with me in that pain. And then I used Caring Bridge to communicate my updates so that I didn't need to like tell everyone the same thing 100 different times with 100 different like text messages from people. So I kind of used that and I got a lot of just like general community support and stuff.
Caring Bridge, I've seen that site. I'm like, I should have used that. Cause I was like you kind of said, I was constantly texting people.
Yeah.
Like to just updates, and I would like, who am I missing? And like people are like, you haven't told me your latest update. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Cause it's like when you're in it, you're just trying to like basically survive. Right.
And so yeah,
it's so hard. Like you want people to be informed, but like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. You're just trying to like live. Yeah.
Yeah. And so after having Lyme disease before that, like, I think I naively thought like, well, I had my health issue. And so getting diagnosed with cancer, like I was surprised, and I didn't even feel like I remember writing on my Caring Bridge, like I didn't feel like I got the short end of the stick. I felt like I didn't even get a stick at all. And, and so I kind of made it my motto on like when in my writing and my updates, like not to stay positive, but to stay real.
Yeah.
And in general, like I'm a fairly positive person. So there's a lot of humor in it. And there was a lot of just like positive like situations I made from it, and like not letting it change my faith and stuff. But I also just didn't want to have to feel like I couldn't speak to the realities of what it's like to have cancer and to go through chemo, and sugarcoat it for other people when it's not sugarcoated for me.
Yeah.
So it definitely wasn't a like horribly negative Caring Bridge, but it was real. And I wanted to keep it real so that if you want a true update of like what's going on, then there it is. Like, you didn't give like all the TMI information. Like, yeah, people didn't know, need to know if I was like constipated. Like, that didn't need to go on there. But yeah, so I still stand by that. To instead of focusing on staying positive, staying real.
Yeah. How did you cope with the diagnosis and going through cancer? What were some of the things you used to cope and to kind of like keep yourself going?
I mean, prayer and my faith for sure. Because sometimes when it's like there is nothing, you just kind of have to hold to that, and like what, nothing else feels certain. So I use my faith and use the connections in my support system and nature when I could. And if I felt up for it, like I'd go for a walk and stuff, but I didn't always feel up for it. And also just being in nursing school with how much work nursing school is, that kept me really distracted and busy. And I think as much as I hate a nursing school, it was almost therapeutic to have it while going through all of that, because it did keep me busy. I think coping has definitely been harder after chemo.
Yeah. How so?
I think so. When first getting diagnosed, at least for me, like I'm in survival mode. It's like, well, here's your options. Here's this, here's that. And I'm like, just do what you have to do. Like, I don't want to die.
Yeah.
And so it really is just kind of go, 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 and just processing all these huge things happening and getting through them. There's not as much time to think about like, how is this trauma going to impact me long term and stuff. And so I've heard this a lot from other cancer people that have had cancer, that it's like afterwards when the chemo and stuff's done, it's just like, now what? And then that's when like the major fears start creeping in, like fears of recurrence, fears of it coming back and killing me. And so I think it's when things slow down enough and kind of step out of that survival mode, that just the weight of that emotional and physical trauma kind of starts to like show itself more.
I had one. It just left my mind. Hold on a second. What was it?
My cat keeps like crawling all over me. So if you see me like leaning, it's because Aurora is just like crawling across me. And I'm like, hi, Aurora. Oh. Do you want to say hi to Renegade?
Hi. Oh, Aurora's the girl, right?
Yeah. Yep.
She is beautiful. I love black cats. My first cat was a black cat. Her name was Jewel. And I got her through a coworker. I'm not going to say her name because what she did was kind of crappy. I got her because she got a kitten for her kids. And then decided that it meowed too much. And so it was like 11 o'clock at night. I'm in my apartment with my roommate, and she had a cat, and she comes knocking on my door and she's like, I'm going to kill this cat. You have to take it. And I was supposed to be moving to Virginia in a week to go do my internship in rec therapy. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm like, I have to take this cat. She's going to kill this cat. So I ended up taking her, and she was like 6 weeks old. I flew with her, and I couldn't drug her because she was too young to like sedate. So I'm on the red eye going to Virginia with this kitten who is losing her mind on the red-eye flight, just freaking out, meowing. Gosh. And I felt so bad. And it's Phoenix, so you can't put any animals underneath the plane because they'll die from heat. And so, like, she had to be, like, in a carrier underneath, like, my chair. I felt so bad. And people were giving me the stink eye the whole time. And I'm like, why did I take this cat? And then, have you ever flown with a cat or flown with your cat?
No.
So they make you leash them. And so I had to leash Jewel, and I put her in a little harness, and it looked adorable, but trying to walk a cat in an airport, and it was O'Hare Airport of all the airports. She was freaking out. And oh my gosh, it was the worst. Like, it was really, it's comical now, but during it, I was like, what was I thinking? Why did I take this
cat? Oh yeah. No, I mean, that's a nightmare then.
What is that? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Also, irresponsible pet owners drive me crazy.
But I'm glad I took her. She ended up staying with my mom. My mom hated cats and then like loved her. It was so funny because she's like, why did you bring this cat home? And it ended up being like her favorite cat. Like,
I feel like that's how it goes. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't mean you as the irresponsible pet owner. You know that, right? Like, just the giving it away, saying I'm going to kill it. Okay. Just making sure.
She's like, yeah, she's like, it meowed too much. It was crazy. So I was just like, wow. Yeah, that's how I got my first cat.
Hmm.
Yeah.
She sounds pretty legendary, Jewel.
She is good. She's up in Roseville. I ended up having to So she was, when my mom passed of cancer, like, it was just kind of like chaos mode. So we ended up having to give her away because where I was, I couldn't take pets. And where my sister was, she couldn't take her. And so I'm like, what do I do with my cat? And so my landlord was nice and, like, found her a home. And I felt so bad, but she was wonderful. I wanted her to have the pretty long hair like Aurora, but she was like a short-haired black cat. But I love black cats with the long, flowy hair. It's gorgeous.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
Yeah, she's ridiculous.
Yeah. She's beautiful. Oh, how did you find First Descents?
This is a funny story, actually. Yeah. So one of my friends from nursing school texted me. She was at a bar, like, drinking with, I don't know, her friends or something one night, and texted me this picture of a coaster that said, like, First Descents, like, adventures or something for, like, young adults who've gone through cancer. And I was like, she's like, this made me think of you, because I was, like, in the middle of treatment or whatever, and she had no idea, like, what it was. So it was, I actually, like, one day, like, looked at the picture of the coaster and then just, like, a coaster, like, hold your beer coaster. And so then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, this seems really cool, actually. And then I was going to go the 1 year. It didn't work out, so then I went this past year. But it's funny, because I don't know that I would have figured it out had it not literally been because my friend sent me a picture when she was drunk of a coaster that said First Ascents on it.
Awesome. I found out through Google, because I'm a rec therapist, so, like, I'm always sending stuff to my kids, like, you have cancer, you lost a leg, these are fun things you can do for free. So when I got diagnosed again, I was like, okay, there's got to be something for adults. And so I went on, like, a stupid cancer's website, and they posted it, and I was like, this is awesome, because I'm like you, I love to be outside, I love to do adventures, I'm a little bit of a thrill seeker. And
same.
Yeah.
And yes, you are, but you're amazing. You are so much fun.
You are too. I had so much fun with you. Like, oh, I am so glad Colorado happened.
Same.
So glad. Yeah. And so, like, I was in treatment when I found out about it. And so I was talking to my family, like, you should probably wait because radiation kind of wiped you out. And it does. And so I waited a year. And I was supposed to actually go to surfing in May, but I didn't have enough PTO, and so that's how I ended up in Colorado, because I love Colorado. If I could live there, I would. I loved it there.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, that altitude kind of got me, but it was pretty to be there.
Did you feel like you had all this energy and all this air once you got back?
Yes, like, I felt like, I remember going, like, the day I got back, went to the gym, and I go to a kickboxing gym, felt like I was blood doping because, like, it was just, like, so easy to work out. And I was like, wow.
Seriously.
Did you feel that way?
Yes. I, like, went for a run. Did I go for a run? It might have been too hot here. I did something that was active. And I went for a run. And I was like, this is easy. I wish it was as easy when I ran. I just flew around and, like, went to work out. And now it's all gone. But, like, for that week, I was like, I am unstoppable. It was so
fun. Yes.
It was so great. Oh, man. What was one of your favorite climbs that we did?
Oh, that's an awesome question. I think it was the day before the last one where there were, like, storms coming in, so we had to leave.
Oh, yeah.
That day was really pretty because it was cool to hike to that spot, and it was just a really, like, pretty spot. And because it was, like, one of the crags more in nature versus just, like, being surrounded by roads and stuff. It was just nice to be able to kind of hike out there and climb. And the view was just really pretty when you got to the top. But that second day where we did the rappelling, or that day,
oh my gosh,
the climbs that day were really fun.
Yeah.
How about you?
I always think of, I think my favorite one, that's hard. It might've been that day where we had to hike and we had to do I think of you. I think of TP. Was that you would say it? Like a tree? Oh, when we were, what was it? A tree pee. Was that you saying that? Maybe it was someone else.
Maybe. I say a lot of weird things.
Yeah. And so I'm like thinking of tree pee. So it was that one. I loved that one. It was really fun. And no, that's not true. It's the one, I think it may have been, was it the second day? It was kind of like, it wasn't in nature, but it was like by a giant lake where we had.
Yeah, that's
like,
the day we rappelled. Yeah. Yes. Or we learned about rappelling.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Those climbs were super fun.
Yeah. There was one on the last, I think the last climb of the day. And it was the one where you had to like hook your foot, like had to like almost throw yourself to like get to like a small like hold. And I had been trying and trying, and I think it was, what was his name? Rutrow. Rutrow was, like, encouraging me, and I was ready to give up. And I was like, no, I can't do this. And he's like, you can do it. And I finally just, like roared and did it and, like, was able to do that climb. And I was like, that was my most favorite moment. It was, like, a cool way to
I remember that with you. And, oh, gosh, we're all so proud. Like, it's, like, pushing yourself and just facing your own, like, what you feel like are your own limitations. And, yes, I think that was amazing. And I see that thrill-seeker part of you just, like, getting out there and doing it anyway.
Yeah, it's fun. Because I don't know about you, but, like, before cancer, I was pretty fearful. And I feel like cancer kind of, like, woke me up. Like, it kind of made me realize, like, life is short. And, like, there's no need to, like, live thinking of all these things that can limit me and to actually just go for stuff. Cause I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. cause like I'm stage four. And so like my first oncologist was like really not great. And my next question is about advocating. Okay. So my first oncologist is really bad and pretty much told me I didn't have much of a life. So I was like, okay, if I don't have much life to live, I'm going to have the best freaking life I can. Like I'm going to do everything.
Yeah.
And I feel like had I not gotten that diagnosis and had I not had the things that happened after it, I don't think I'd be where I am today. Like, it sucks. Like, I don't like going to oncology appointments and spending the money and the poking and prodding and CT scans and all that and all the blood work. But, like, it's kind of been, like, a weird, helpful thing and at the same time. Like, it's just kind of changed who I am.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And, I mean, cancer is a way of, like, it's easy in other ways of life just to avoid the things we're afraid of and avoid, like, pushing ourselves, but I feel like something with cancer is, like, you kind of have to step up, and so it's definitely made me, like, braver in general and stuff, too, and just see things differently and similarly, but yeah, it has a way of, like, kind of forcing you to face your fears and think about things that I might not otherwise think about, like, my mortality or, like, how fragile life is.
Yeah, because I don't know, like, I think when you're young, you feel like you're invincible, like, mm-hmm. you don't really think much of death until a funky diagnosis, and you're like, oh, my life is not as long as it could be.
Yeah, yep. And so it's like, yes, I had you asked me before, I wouldn't be like, yeah, I'm immortal, you know, but it would be like, yeah, I know cancer can happen, I know these bad things can happen, but like, it won't happen to me.
Yeah.
And it's humbling.
Yeah.
And also really does, it's woke me up as well in some ways.
So during your, because you said you had to switch doctors, can you talk about advocating for yourself? Because sometimes, and you're in a medical, you're a nurse, so you kind of know more things to expect in the medical field. But like some of us, like me, well, I kind of am, but like you sometimes are afraid to question, even if you feel like something might be wrong that your doctor's telling you. You're like, well, they're the doctor, they know what they're doing, but then stuff can end up happening. Like I had bad experiences. And so like, can you speak to like what it, how to advocate for yourself? And
I mean, I'd say I definitely with like Lyme disease, I learned that more. I think I saw 15 doctors before I got a diagnosis of Lyme disease. That's a whole thing. But even so, like as a nurse in an emergency department, like I see it sometimes too, like people that get taken seriously and people that don't. And so like my biggest advice is like to be persistent. If you know something's wrong or you know something's not right, like just be persistent, see other people. If you have to do what you have to do, but if someone's not going to listen, like I think the bias against like young people in medicine or like young people that could be sick or like, especially young women just don't get taken as seriously in general, that I think like our complaints can very much just be kind of like dismissed or like, oh, you're fine. You have a cough or something when there's like something actually going on. And so it's really just like trusting your gut and keep speaking up for yourself is my best advice. And if you feel like you're not taken seriously by a medical provider, like see somebody else. But yeah, just don't give up if you know something's wrong.
All right. What are your goals for this year? How is life now?
Well, 2020 is a weird year, so my number one goal is to get out of 2020 and still be healthy.
Yeah.
But so moving in with my partner, probably getting engaged, our big goals for the year, just staying healthy and taking care of myself in the best ways that I can. And just continuing to grow, just like spiritually, emotionally, physically challenging myself in the best ways. And I think like after cancer, like a 5-year plan doesn't seem as big of a deal anymore. It's like more like I just want the chance to have that because I know the other things will work out. So really just continuing to move forwards and be involved in my community and get out of 2020.
That's a good goal.
It's like every month goes by so fast, but this year is somehow eternal. Like how is it already the middle of June? / how is it still 2020?
Yes, seriously. Like, it's so funny. I remember, like, New Year's Eve, I was with friends, and we were, like, playing games and hanging out and just having a blast and so excited for this year. And, like, it's going to be great. There's going to be so many fun opportunities. And you're like, what the heck? I want my money back. Like,
yeah.
So manageable.
Yes.
What is this?
Yes. Oh my gosh, for sure. There's some like weird juju in 2020.
Yes. I'm just like, there's like, it's just crazy. So I'm just like, okay. So I'm like, I've gotten to more of a like one day at a time, one day, mm-hmm. and then like a lot of self care.
Yes. Too. Yes. Absolutely. Can't pour from an empty cup.
No, I have learned that big time. Like, you really cannot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what are you loving right now?
What am I loving right now? The season. It's summery. It's been just getting outside, having the opportunity to be out in nature, loving the people that, like my friends and my family, being connected. As much as Zoom meetings are weird, it's still been nice to be able to check in with people. But I'm just loving the season more than anything. And just at least with summer, and if there's still distancing measures, like there's a lot of places I can still go.
Yeah.
And working on just like loving myself better. And I love my cats.
Do you have any like rock climbing trips planned, or like are the gyms open there yet, like for rock climbing?
No, the gyms aren't open yet. So I have a punch pass to Vertical Endeavors, the climbing gym. And so I was going quite a bit with my partner, but then now that that's closed, I will definitely go back when those open up again. I think that my upper body strength is going to be a very, very sad sight. So it's going to be a challenge, but it'll be good. I'm excited to get back to that. My kickboxing gym has been doing some outside workouts too, because it's easier to distance. So I really enjoy doing that. Yeah.
Caroline, I love having you on.
I love getting to see you and talk with you. It's amazing.
It's so great. Okay, let me turn off the hi, Aura.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed hanging out with Caroline as much as I did. In the show notes, I'm going to put some resources about checking yourself for breast cancer. As women, it's something that we just need to do. And not only is this sharing stories of these awesome survivors, but also sharing awareness and the importance of checking ourselves to make sure that we are okay. And that's what I love most about towards the end of our interview when she talked about if you feel like something's wrong and you feel like someone's not listening to you, be persistent, keep pushing, because you will find the right doctor or the right person to get you what you need to be helped, because you don't want to end up with something that can just really take a toll on your body and your life. So definitely, if you are a woman or even guys who are listening, if you feel like something is wrong with your body, definitely get it checked out. Just listen to that inner voice or God or anyone who is telling you that something is up. Listen to that voice, because something could truly be up. And so I love that she kind of put that in there towards the end. So yeah, love talking to her. I will put all info about breast cancer screening and checks in the show notes, and also more information about First Descents and some other really cool cancer organizations that if you know any young adult cancer survivors, they should definitely try to be a part of. All right. Next week's guest is my final survivor in the series. Also love her just as much. Her name is Krista Booge. And I'm going to say W because I cannot say your last name, Krista. I'm so sorry. So she will be on next week. She is equally as amazing. You'll love her story. And she is a lymphoma survivor. So she'll be on to share her story. So I have my three asks, of course. My first ask is, if you love what you heard today, please share with a friend or family member or whoever. Just pass it on the podcast. My second ask is to subscribe. If you want to get the episodes a day early or get any info about any freebies I'm doing, or if I do an event, if events happen ever again when COVID vanishes, hopefully it will, it'll be in my email. So definitely you wanna gonna go on to my website, go to the contact us, put your info in the email slot, and then that's it. You're part of the mailing list. Super easy, super simple. And then finally, share the episode. Oh, I already said that. My bad. Ratings. Rate the episode rate the show. If you like what you hear, ratings helps me know what you're loving, what I need to do better, and it also helps people find the podcast. Again, I am so glad that you guys tune in each week. I appreciate all my listeners. Thank you so much for the feedback that you give on social media, through email, through text messages. I love you guys. You're the reason I do this. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week. Bye.